Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homegrown terrorists want to attack the heart of government and murder our leaders. The stark warning today from law enforcement. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC. Target Washington.
They want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible.
Police warn of extremist chatter about bombing the Capitol when the president addresses Congress. Texas power failure. Utility leaders grilled over what went so wrong.
It's your responsibility to prevent us from ever going into a catastrophe that we're coming out of.
Why the system is so vulnerable and how to fix it. Lady Gaga, her dog walker shot, her dogs stolen, the search for the pets, and the alarming spike in dog nabbing all across America. And COVID Watch. Why do some infected people have no symptoms and some people get sick, even die? New today, the four specific conditions raising enormous red flags.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
And good evening. The same extremist groups that stormed the Capitol are now talking about blowing it up and killing as many lawmakers as possible when President Biden gives a speech to the Congress. That's the bombshell warning today from the acting Capitol Police Chief. She revealed the new threat during a House hearing on the security failures of January the 6th. The chief made it clear the insurrectionists are not done yet.
We know that members of the militia groups that were present on January 6th have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible with a direct nexus to the State of the Union.
We're expecting President Biden to give a State of the Union style address after Congress passes his COVID relief package. Of course, we still don't know exactly when that'll be. The acting Capitol Police Chief told lawmakers the beefed up security around the Capitol needs to remain in place, including fences with razor wire. NBC's Ken Delanian covers national security and is on our top story tonight. How serious, how credible this, Ken?
Hey, Shep. A senior law enforcement official tells us that this talk of blowing up the Capitol, while concerning, is not considered a fully hatched plot, and that actually authorities are more concerned about violence on March 4th. That was Inauguration Day until 1937, and it's now a day that QAnon conspiracy theorists believe that former President Donald Trump will retake power. So authorities want to be ready for that. Meanwhile, Shep, the Biden administration is moving to step up efforts against domestic terrorism. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas today announced $77 million in new grants to state and local governments to target violent domestic extremists, which he called the most lethal and persistent terrorism-related threats to our country today. And in her testimony to Congress today, acting Capitol Police Chief Yogananda Pittman really said that the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6th posed a direct threat to democracy. Take a listen.
We know that the insurrectionists that attacked the Capitol weren't only interested in attacking members of Congress and officers. They wanted to send a symbolic message to the nation as to who was in charge of that legislative process.
Shep, the government is also trying to step up its efforts to collect intelligence about domestic terrorism amid deepening questions about whether January 6th was the result of an intelligence failure. Because Acting Chief Pittman told lawmakers today that the Capitol Police had information that violent militia groups, armed, were going to be present at that January 6th Stop the Steal rally and that they might attack Congress. But she said there was no credible intelligence from the FBI or any other agency that a coordinated attack on the Capitol was possible. But Shep, in the days leading up to January 6th, there were open calls on social media for violence to stop that election certification, and it remains unclear why the FBI and the Capitol Police didn't take those more seriously. Shep?
Ken Delanian, thank you. Tragedy and scandal rocking U.S. women's gymnastics yet again. The former Olympic head coach, John Gettert, today killed himself, hours after prosecutors charged him with 24 crimes, including sexual assault and human trafficking. That's according to police, who found the man's body just outside Lansing, Michigan. His lawyer said he agreed to surrender at a sheriff's office before his arraignment, but he never showed up. He used to own a Michigan gymnastics club where former gymnastics team physician Larry Nassar also worked. Nassar sentenced to at least 40 years in prison for sexually assaulting more than 150 gymnasts. Here's NBC's Jay Gray.
He led the USA Women's Fierce Five to Olympic gold in 2012. But Michigan's district attorney says, away from the competition and cameras, Coach John Gettert was a monster.
My office is committed to pursuing justice.
Investigators say Gettert used his credentials as a U.S. Olympic coach to convince parents to have their children train at his Twist Stars gym in Diamonddale, Michigan. But instead of coaching the young girls, he's accused of subjecting them to abuse and forced labor.
The victims suffer from disordered eating, including bulimia and anorexia, suicide attempts and self-harm, excessive physical conditioning, repeatedly being forced to perform even when injured, extreme emotional abuse, and physical abuse, including sexual assault.
Gettert was charged with 24 counts, including human trafficking, racketeering, criminal sexual conduct, and lying to police during their investigation of Larry Nassar, the disgraced U.S. team doctor convicted of abusing dozens of athletes and possessing child pornography. Several gymnasts allege Gettert forced them to visit Nassar. The longtime coach, who had been the focus of previous investigations, had denied any wrongdoing. He's the fifth person to face charges tied to the Nassar case.
Yeah, and a couple of quick points on this case. Now, the alleged offenses stretched from 2008 to 2016. To this point, we have not heard from USA Gymnastics. That organization did suspend the coach during Nassar's hearing for sentencing in 2018. He resigned a few days later, Shep.
Jay Gray, thank you. How'd the Texas disaster happen? One of the worst in state history. Well, now there's new insight. State lawmakers held two hearings demanding answers from energy executives, questioning them about how they allowed millions to lose power from a winter storm that they knew fully well was coming. One of the executives admitted that the entire energy sector failed Texas. Today we learned the power grid was, get this, 4 minutes, 37 seconds from total collapse. That's according to ERCOT, the company that runs the grid. ERCOT officials say had the company not ordered controlled outages, the state would have been completely in the dark for weeks. ERCOT CEO calling it a devastating event, but saying he stands by the decisions that were made.
I feel a great deal of responsibility and remorse about the event, but I will, and you know, will continue to investigate and be investigated, but I believe the operators on our team did everything they could have in a dramatic, very difficult situation.
You wouldn't have changed anything in terms of your play calling during those critical hours?
As I sit here now, I don't believe I would.
But what about the designing of the grid in the first place? So far, NBC News reports five ERCOT board members, all of whom lived out of state, have resigned. And a sixth person withdrew his name to fill a vacant spot, noting he also lives outside of Texas. CNBC's Brian Sullivan now live in Houston. Brian?
Yeah, Shep, I mean, this was a colossal failure on so many levels. We call it the perfect storm, literally and figuratively. As you noted, it could have been worse, but it was very, very bad, and it is nowhere near being over. In fact, the anger is rising as fast as the cost estimates. By one measure today, this storm could end up costing the state and its people $125 billion. That would be the most expensive disaster and accident in Texas history, which really says something. Now, you can see behind us here, there are piles of debris like this all over the city of Houston, and I'm sure other cities in Texas, flooring, carpets, everything ripped out, because when the power came on, or even before it did, water pipes burst everywhere. Spoke with a woman today who had freezing, no heat, freezing cold water running through her home as well. So you're seeing these kind of debris. ERCOT, what they said today was that this exceeded their worst case scenario. They ran a couple of simulations. This was worse than that. At one point, Shep, 48% of their grid was down, and they represent 75% of the states, 5 million households. These are some big numbers. Now, as far as the hearings that go today, there were some moments where the anger was clear. Watch one state rep hammer one of the CEOs about who is to blame.
Who's at fault? I don't want to hear about systems. I want to hear who's at fault. I want the public to know who screwed up.
Yeah, frustrated, Chip, clearly by what they viewed as some sort of corporate doublespeak. Now, remember this. You ask how to fix it. 2011, they had a bad winter storm. Not as bad as this, but bad. They put out all these recommendations on a state and federal level about how to prevent it. Winterization, etc. Guess what? Recommendations largely ignored.
Off the national grid in Texas, Brian, thank you. President Biden marking a vaccine milestone today at the White House. 50 million doses administered in the 37 days he's been in office. More than 68 million overall, according to the CDC. Getting a COVID vaccine is something everybody must do for years to come. That, according to Pfizer's CEO.
Every year you need to go to get your flu vaccine. So it's going to be the same with COVID. Any year you will have to go and get your annual shot for COVID to be protected.
Vaccine makers, including Pfizer and Moderna, working to improve the vaccine so that it offers better protection and is easier to store. CNBC's Meg Terrell covers science and medicine for us. Meg, take us inside what these companies are doing.
Yeah, Shep, so normally when we're not in a pandemic, drug companies spend years perfecting their products before they bring them to market. But because of the health emergency we've been in, they generated the data they needed to prove the vaccines work and are safe, and now they're making them easier to handle. So case in point, today, Pfizer got the FDA's green light to be able to ship and store its COVID vaccine at more normal freezer temperatures for 2 weeks. Now remember, this is the vaccine that's had to be kept at minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit for long-term storage. The FDA says this should increase flexibility and help get the vaccine to more sites. Moderna saying today it's also developing a next-generation vaccine it hopes could be stored in the fridge. The Pfizer today also saying it started testing booster shots of its vaccine, just as we heard from Moderna last night. And both companies are looking at updating the vaccines to tailor them to concerning new variants, should that be needed. We also heard from Moderna this morning. It expects at least $18 billion in revenue from its COVID vaccine this year alone. So kind of makes sense they're polishing up these products because they're likely to be needed and generating a lot of revenue for some time, Shep.
Yeah, it makes plenty of sense. Meg, we know people with underlying conditions are at higher risk for COVID, but we didn't know the specifics. It sounds like now we know four very specific conditions.
Absolutely. A new study suggests that almost two-thirds of COVID hospitalizations in the U.S. have been tied to four underlying health conditions: obesity, hypertension or high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart failure. Now, the study was led by researchers at Tufts University, and they estimate that a 10% reduction in these conditions could potentially prevent 11% of hospitalizations from COVID-19. The researchers say more should be done to promote heart health and that the findings provide more support to prioritize vaccine distribution to people with these conditions because they're at higher risk, Shep.
Clearly so. Meg Terrell, thank you. February is always the peak of flu season in America. Always until now. The CDC reports cases of flu are at their lowest level in decades. Look at this. Last week, there were 17 reported cases of flu in America out of more than 40,000 tests nationwide. Now, during the same week last year, there were more than 18,000 reported cases out of nearly 57,000 tests. The experts say less travel is part of it, but mainly it's COVID safety measures, like wearing masks and social distancing, that prevented the twindemic we all feared of flu and COVID. And think of this. If we wear masks and wash our hands every flu season in the years ahead, we could avoid untold thousands of flu deaths. CNBC has learned there is a stark rise in theft of dogs in America. And now, Lady Gaga's French bulldogs stolen in a violent shooting. the crime captured on video obtained by TMZ. Her dog walker shot. The dogs stolen. A huge reward posted. Now we know dog theft is escalating nationwide. Low supply, high demand in COVID, enter criminals. And heartbreak. The murder of the Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. The Saudi royals paid no price. Now the White House on track to lay blame on the crown prince himself.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Methane management is a critical part of achieving a lower carbon future. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. They're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. And they've trialed over 13 advanced detection technologies, including drones and satellites. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.
There is an alarming rise in people stealing dogs in America. Now it's happened to Lady Gaga. Her dog walker shot in the chest. Two of her prized French bulldogs stolen. The suspect still on the lam. It happened in West Hollywood just last night. And TMZ got the surveillance video. We're about to show it to you, but a warning now. It's extremely graphic. Before the neighbor called 911, the dog walker lay there crying for help, pleading that he was bleeding from his chest and that the dogs were Lady Gaga's. He was rushed to the hospital, and sources close to Gaga tell us, or tell NBC News, that he is recovering well. As for the two still missing dogs, Lady Gaga put up a $500,000 reward for their return. No questions asked. We crunched the data today from across the nation, and CNBC found puppy theft is a growing and serious problem, with stolen purebred dogs going for thousands of dollars on a sort of black market. Here's CNBC's Scott Cohn.
Whoever it was that stole two of the most famous French bulldogs in the world and shot the man who was walking them, it's not clear they had any idea of what the man told his rescuers moments later. Perhaps more important to the thieves, Koji and Gustav are among the most valuable breeds around these days. Known for their stocky build, big ears, and friendly temperament, French bulldogs can sell for more than $8,000 a pup, which could explain a wave of French bulldog thefts. In San Francisco, Sarah Forehouse is searching for Chloe, taken violently in broad daylight.
He had a gun, and he said, "Give me your dog," and then he punched me twice.
Another dog stolen from a Houston pet store, the theft caught on surveillance cameras. The crooks speed away with employee Eliza James hanging onto the hood of their car, trying unsuccessfully to get the dog back.
I obviously didn't care about my well-being.
The thieves are as sophisticated and organized as they are brazen. In Atlanta, thieves stole this car while its owner stopped for gas. Clearly not interested in the car, they wanted Stormy in the back seat with her crate and her food.
Anybody can look at that dog and know it's an expensive dog. It's a very expensive dog.
Why French bulldogs and why now? Well, believe it or not, it may have something to do with the pandemic. We're stuck at home. Pets are in demand, especially a friendly, docile breed like French bulldogs. Researchers in the UK say dog thefts there are up 170% since the lockdowns began. And in tough economic times, it doesn't help that these particular dogs can fetch a lot of money. Shep?
Scott Cohn, thank you. The former president's tax returns are finally in the hands of city prosecutors in New York. It comes after the Supreme Court refused to block the release of his personal and corporate tax and other financial records to a grand jury. The decision forced the former president's accountants to turn over the documents, which he'd been fighting for years to keep away from investigators and the Congress. NBC's investigative correspondent Tom Winter now. Tom, millions of pages, I understand, evidence all turned over.
That's exactly right. And good evening, Shep. So, you know, you'd think that the hard part was over for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. They won a round in the Supreme Court, avoided a second one, and you'd think from here it was smooth sailing. But really, those millions of pages of documents that you referenced are, in fact, the hard part of the investigation ahead. How do you organize them? How do you put them together? And how do you try to figure out whether or not you've got a case and wrongdoing ahead? So former prosecutors that we've spoken with, including ones that have brought cases against Paul Manafort and other people in tax fraud cases, say the real challenge going forward is building that timeline. What was the president and the Trump organization presenting to banks, insurance companies in the state of New York with their tax filings, and were they doing it at the same time? And were they making representations to banks about income and assets at the same time they were making perhaps different presentations to state tax authorities? So those are the types of things that they'll look at. They'll try to speak to some of the people involved in preparing these taxes, getting them before a grand jury, locking in their testimony. And perhaps, according to one former federal prosecutor, Andrew Weissman, who was involved in the Manafort case, the key might be flipping or getting some of those people to cooperate in the ongoing investigation to perhaps be able to tell the narrative of what happened here. Now, this case has expanded. Initially started with Stormy Daniels and the payments that were made there, and now has gone on to other Trump properties, and as CNBC reported, even his property in Seven Springs, New York. So much more to come, but a long ways down the road, Shep.
Tom Winter, thanks so much. Twitter is experimenting with some new features as it tries to get more users, among them super follows. Twitter announced today this is a screenshot of what that would look like. It's testing the idea of getting people to pay for subscriptions to their favorite accounts. Then there are micro communities, small groups filled with users who care about the same things. Another new feature, safety mode. It would detect when you start getting a bunch of negative posts, and then you can activate safety mode to block the noise. And finally, there's Birdwatch. This would allow you to help stop the spread of misinformation by adding warning labels to certain posts. President Biden speaks with the King of Saudi Arabia, discussing human rights and the rule of law. But there is another topic that could impact the relationship between our two countries. There's a new report, another one, that implicates the King's son in the killing of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And GameStop won't stop. Yet another surge. We're following the latest uptick and the reason behind the climb.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
There's breaking news now on CNBC, and this just into our newsroom. The Senate parliamentarian has ruled that the $15 minimum wage hike that's been proposed, that the president had promised, cannot be included in the president's coronavirus relief package. House Democrats preparing to advance the $1.9 trillion relief bill sometime tomorrow. The question had been, would it be proper and appropriate? In fact, would it be sort of within the rules to include this in the relief package for COVID, the disaster relief money for millions and millions of people across the land? That decision came to the parliamentarian in the United States Senate. We had expected a ruling late yesterday or sometime this afternoon. Moments ago, during the commercial break, it came. The $15 an hour minimum wage promise cannot go into the COVID relief package. There will be more news on this, no doubt. First, though, GameStop is at it again. The stock soaring more than 140% over the past couple of days. Trading halted over and over because of this surge. GameStop closed today at just less than $109. The rally really confused Wall Street. It comes after a major shakeup at the company. GameStop announced that the chief financial officer, Jim Bell, will resign at the end of March. The board reportedly forced him out. The brick-and-mortar company was at the center of last month's market mayhem. Retail traders on Reddit's Wall Street Bets forum targeted a number of stocks shorted by Wall Street's big hedge funds. CNBC's Kate Rooney now. Kate, how is this happening again?
Shep, GameStop's rally appears to be driven by traders on social media. The stock began to climb yesterday as thousands of people began talking it up on Reddit. According to data firm Thinkum, chatter about GameStop ticked up around 3 p.m. on Wednesday. That, as you can see, coincided with that big stock move. GameStop has not put out a statement on the price action, and neither has its regulator, the Securities and Exchange Commission, also known as the SEC.
If I were in the SEC, I would pick up the phone right now and say, okay, come on. What's going on? You can't keep doing this. You can't just allow this to happen without putting some sort of statement out.
As far as what sparked this excitement, some think it may have been a cryptic message from GameStop board member and the founder of e-commerce site Chewy. Ryan Cohen tweeted an emoji of a frog and a picture of an ice cream cone. Some are speculating that that means Cohen plans to come in and fix GameStop. They see it as an analogy for McDonald's fixing its ice cream machines, which are apparently known for breaking down. Another theory, a Wall Street research firm put out a report suggesting that GameStop could buy Esports Entertainment Group. That company says it has not held talks with GameStop. And regardless of what's driving it, the excitement on Reddit's popular forum, Wall Street Bets, is palpable. Online traders are encouraging each other to buy and hold on to GameStop. And there are a lot of people posting emojis of rocket ships, meaning they think this stock is going to the moon. Shep.
Kate Rooney, thank you. Costco is giving employees a pay raise. And that's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. Starting next week, the company's minimum wage is going up a dollar from 15 to 16 bucks an hour. That's more than Amazon, Target, or Walmart. A year ago, Costco gave employees a $2 an hour premium to help offset the financial blow from the pandemic. Best Buy, on the other hand, is cutting jobs and closing more stores. The company announced today it has laid off 5,000 workers just this month. The CEO there says some workers will be retrained for digital roles. America's love for hard seltzer bailing out Anheuser-Busch. Its seven different hard seltzer brands helped boost sales during the pandemic, topping out at more than $2 billion. On Wall Street, a bruising day on the corner of Wall and Broad. The Dow down 560, the S&P down 96, the NASDAQ down 479. Concerns about inflation messed with bond yields, even with no signs of inflation. We'll let the Squawk Box crew explain that first thing tomorrow morning. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. New tonight, the White House says President Biden has spoken with the King of Saudi Arabia. It comes as the White House prepares to declassify and release a U.S. intelligence report that clearly blames the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS, for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. The Washington Post columnist, an outspoken critic of the Saudi regime. Back in 2018, NBC News learned the CIA concluded MBS ordered the hit squad that lured Khashoggi into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, killed him, and cut his body into pieces. But the former president refused to release that intelligence report and publicly sowed doubt that the crown prince or the Saudis in general were involved in Khashoggi's murder. CNBC's Ayman Javers now on the top story at the bottom of the hour. Ayman?
Yeah, Shep, that's right. This is a sharp change in direction from the way we saw Donald Trump handle this U.S.-Saudi relationship. For Trump, he viewed this relationship largely through the prism of military sales. And you remember that he hosted Mohammed bin Salman in the Oval Office before the Khashoggi murder in 2018 and held up a poster displaying the billions of dollars in hardware that the Saudis planned to purchase. And Trump was proud of his relationship with the crown prince, telling journalist Bob Woodward, "I saved his ass, and I was able to get Congress to leave him alone," also saying he believed MBS's denial that he ordered the murder. The Biden White House, though, says it wants to recalibrate the U.S.-Saudi relationship and has made a point of having the president deal directly with the Saudi King Salman, not his controversial son, MBS. In the official readout of the call today between Biden and the Saudi King, the White House said the two men spoke about human rights and the rule of law. On Capitol Hill, rare bipartisan agreement today about the gruesome nature of the report they expect to receive.
I'm expecting that I will be sickened by it, but completely unsurprised by it.
That is not acceptable to the United States or other civilized nations to go in and basically assassinate and dismember your political and opponents or member of the press. So I hope President Biden talks to him straight about it.
Now, the challenge for the Biden team is going to be figuring out a way to hold MBS accountable while still getting what it wants from the U.S.-Saudi relationship. And that includes everything from support on counterterrorism to energy production, Shep.
Ayman Javers, thank you. Michael O'Hanlon now, senior fellow specializing in foreign policy at the Brookings Institution. Michael, as always, thank you. On the campaign trail, President Biden promised to make the Saudis, quote, pay the price and make them the pariah that they are. How do you think he can do that?
Hi, Shepard. Well, he's not going to make them a pariah because, to my mind, that would imply cutting off the kind of economic and military relationship right. We have with the Saudis. This is a relationship, after all, that's gone through 9/11, when we know that the Saudis tolerated the Wahhabi strain of Islam and a preaching approach in many of its mosques that actually motivated a lot of the hijackers and other extremists. But the two sides need each other. The world economy still needs that Saudi oil, even if we don't need it here in the U.S. per se. And the Saudis need our military protection. And we don't want them to lose a war against Iran. So there's only so far you can push this. We are not going to make the Saudis a pariah nation if what you hear by that word, as I do, is North Korea or Iran itself, you know, or some other extremist government. There's going to be symbolic pushback, like the president today calling the aging king rather than Mohammed bin Salman. Unfortunately, President Biden may not have 4 years worth of time to call the king, because the king may not last that long. So he's going to have to figure out how to still deal with Mohammed bin Salman, even if we show some symbolic limits on the relationship.
I didn't mean to interrupt. There's a bad satellite delay. But Michael, you and I have been talking about this murder for the past 2.5 years. There is no doubt among U.S. intelligence who murdered him, who lured him in there, who chopped him into bits, and his body's never been found. No question at all. It's MBS, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. And he pays no price of any kind?
Well, I think we need to make the symbolic price as high as it can be. I wouldn't let him visit the United States. I would try to discourage American investors from going to conferences in Saudi Arabia and being feted by this guy. I would try to treat him personally like a little bit of persona non grata in sort of the world of symmetry, of diplomacy, to the extent possible. and make him stew on that for a couple of years. It's not the same thing as really punishing the country or changing the basic relationship, but I think he would feel it. He's a guy who likes to be rubbing elbows in the power, in the corridors of power and high economics and finance. And I think we should at least deprive him of that.
Michael, there's been a new development tonight. The Pentagon is now reporting that President Biden authorized a strike against an Iranian-backed militia in Syria and did so in response to a series of rocket attacks against U.S. targets inside Iraq. What are we seeing here? Is this an escalation? Is this a retaliation? Is a message being sent? What is it?
Yeah, that's a great question, Shepard. I think President Biden had no choice because undoubtedly, with this shaky American commitment to our very small presence in northeastern Syria and a new person in the White House, undoubtedly people in that region were going to test President Biden to see if he's really looking for an excuse to leave or if he's prepared to defend the American position with lethal force if necessary. And I think tonight he gave the inevitable and necessary and obvious answer. So I think, you know, this is something Israel's been doing, repeatedly striking Hezbollah targets. We've usually focused only on the ISIS targets, which means the campaign's really not been as intensive the last couple of years. But this is something Biden needed to do to clarify the United States will not be intimidated out of that modest presence in northeastern Syria, where we're still helping our Kurdish friends.
Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institution, thank you. Hundreds of migrant children remain separated from their parents right now. And the problem could be far from over, because now even more are making the trek all alone and actually leaving your house and going to school. For a lot of families, it seems like a thing of the past. Now one state is considering a do-over. And wish you could bust out your old skates, dust them off, and get back on the ice. If you're into that sort of thing, of course. Well, this man is, and that is exactly what he did. And it's all thanks to a fire hose, a couple of hockey dads, and a little leg work. Warriors say they have finally found the parents of more than 100 migrant children separated by the Trump administration. But they're not yet reunited, and there are still hundreds of kids whose parents have not yet been found. 506, to be exact, according to lawyers and advocates. They say of those, they believe more than 300 have already been deported back to their home countries, making it nearly impossible to reunite them. NBC News' Jacob Soboroff now. He broke this story along with Julia Ainsley. And Jacob, now there's an increase in the number of children crossing the border without their parents.
There are, Shep, and I think, you know, the important context for that is during every presidential transition, you do see an uptick in people crossing the southwest border, including unaccompanied migrant children. And I think where you see some bipartisan pushback on the Biden administration tonight and this week is over the use of what's called temporary influx facilities. You might remember the Tornillo tent city in the desert during the family separation crisis, or the Homestead facility down there in South Florida. The reason that people are upset about this, both left and right, is that these are unlicensed facilities. The oversight mechanisms for these facilities are not in place in the way that they would be for a permanent shelter. These are not the facilities that were referred to as kids in cages. They're not operated by Customs and Border Protection. It is where the U.S. government has to legally put child refugees before they are discharged to sponsors. If the Biden administration is going to make a departure from this strategy, which has historically been used, was used under Obama and Trump, they haven't signaled that they're willing to do that yet. I don't think anybody wants to see these children in unlicensed facilities, including the government itself.
Jacob, what about the families of the remaining children separated by the former administration?
Well, I think it is extraordinarily good news. Obviously, anybody would say that. To find the children and start the process if they're not back together or putting them back together with their parents. But there is a lot of work yet to do, Shep. President Biden has announced this family separation reunification task force. It's not just the remaining 506 children whose parents have yet to be reached by the government. There's potentially another 1,000 on top of that who were deported without their children. It will be a Herculean effort to go find, track down, and ultimately reunite these families, but it's a promise that the president made. He called the policy criminal, and he said that he was going to do a thorough investigation in terms of accountability.
NBC's Jacob Soboroff, always on this one. Thanks so much. A police force gets a new set of wheels to fight crime, and supporters of a military coup attack their rivals as we go round the world in 80 seconds. We'll be right back.
Myanmar, supporters of the military coup marching through Yangon, the country's largest city. Some of them fired catapults and threw stones at opponents of the coup during counter-protests. Two people reportedly stabbed as violence between the groups escalated. People have protested daily across the country since the army took power last month and detained the ruling party leaders. Italy. At least 41 people are dead after a boat capsized in the Mediterranean Sea. United Nations officials say 120 migrants were on that boat. It left Libya last week. Crews on a commercial boat rescued the survivors and took them all to a port in Sicily. Pakistan. Cops on rollerblades, ready to fight crime in the country's largest city of Karachi. Training on wheels, covering everything from jumping to going over stairs and aiming their guns. It's all part of the government's effort to curb theft and harassment on city streets, rolling over crime as we skate round the world in 80 seconds. From iPhones to AirPods, Apple products have infiltrated most people's lives. Now the company is snagging a piece of Target as well. The retailer opening many Apple shops inside 17 stores this month. That'll double the tech giant's footprint in each location. They plan to expand to even more stores in the fall. This isn't the first time Target's tried the so-called shop-in-shops concept. They've done it just exactly the same with Disney, Levi's, and have hundreds planned with Ulta Beauty. Well, they saw him get shot and decided they'd get shot too. The king getting the polio vaccine in public and changing hearts and minds. Now, a new effort to convince Americans the COVID vaccine is indeed safe. So who's rolling up their sleeves for this one? And when COVID closed the skating rinks, this hockey town had two options. Go big or go home. They went big. Really big. And the story is next. There was Rosie the Riveter, McGruff the Crime Dog, and the Crash Test Dummies, remember? There were so many more. The famous and familiar campaigns created by the National Ad Council. And today there's a new one called It's Up to You. The goal, convince Americans, get the COVID vaccine. It's a $50 million advertising effort. Billed as one of the largest public education campaigns ever. Hundreds of companies and celebrities over and over taking part to take a shot at vaccine skepticism. According to a Gallup poll, about 3 in 10 Americans say they will not get the COVID vaccine. CNBC's Rahel Solomon on the campaign to change their minds. Can prevent
forest fire. Some new names will soon join the ranks of Smokey Bear.
Only you.
The creative minds behind the 1940s fire prevention campaign in 2021.
Why should I get vaccinated?
Have enlisted actors Angela Bassett and John Leguizamo to move the needle and help convince millions of Americans to get the COVID-19 vaccines. They're following in the footsteps of 65 and older celebrities who've recently been posting on social media.
I'm going to get my COVID-19 vaccination.
From supermodel Chrissy Brinkley to actor Samuel L. Jackson and funny man Steve Martin.
For some people, having celebrities who are familiar faces speaking up and saying that they are taking the vaccine or that they can vouch for the safety of it will be convincing.
A strategy that is not without precedent. Newspapers around the country printed this photo of the king receiving the polio vaccine backstage at the Ed Sullivan Show in 1956. Some say this shook up public opinion.
The percentage of teenagers that actually got the polio vaccination after this promotion went from 0.6% to almost 80% in 6 months.
A more recent example of A-list influence, what researchers at Harvard called the Angelina Jolie effect. In 2013, the starlet penned an op-ed in the New York Times after her preventative double mastectomy. Very public disclosure triggered a spike in genetic tests for breast cancer.
To try to bring about change.
Dr. Lisa Cooper runs the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Equity. She hopes to draft NFL players to promote COVID vaccine safety. But the person most likely to change minds isn't on the field.
The overwhelming majority, though, of Americans say that they would take the advice of their own physician.
Dr. Cooper acknowledges not everyone will want to roll up their sleeve like she did, but says it's worth a shot to try. For the news, I'm Rahel Solomon.
Well, for nearly a year now, most students have been learning on Zoom instead of in school, playing with other kids in chat rooms instead of recess. So a new bill introduced in New Jersey would let students repeat a grade. A New Jersey state senator saying remote learning has not been an ideal situation for every student, especially students in low-income districts that lack the equipment or connectivity to even show up to the online classroom. Studies have found that since the pandemic, students with disabilities, students from low-income families, or those who are Black or Hispanic have fallen alarmingly behind. Well, great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what some hockey fans in Minnesota have earned this winter. Because in the original Hockey Town USA, not even a pandemic can keep people off the ice. With the rinks closed, they looked at the river that snakes through town and decided, we'll build our own Miracle on Ice. Local coverage from NBC station Care 11 and their reporter Boyd Huppert.
Kids in War Road don't arrive in the world with their skates already laced, but almost.
I was born to skate, my mom said.
Anderson Myers' birthright. Growing up in Hockey Town, USA.
Yep.
Till hockey went away.
They said that we can't go skating.
Couldn't skate at the start of hockey season when COVID shut down War Road's arenas. News Hockey Town USA didn't take. Standing still. No indoor rinks, no problem. War Road just cut its own path. 21 feet wide, snaking through town on the War Road River, an ice path 2.5 miles long.
We're in Hockey Town USA, so go big.
As Jared Olofsson tells it, this started with a slew of COVID-inspired outdoor ice rinks.
I have a rink in my backyard on the river. My brother has a rink in his backyard on the river. And then the neighbor has a rink. And one day, the neighbor's daughter said, can you connect our rinks? There's no school. There's no hockey. Connect the rinks. So we connected the rinks and decided, why even stop? Keep going.
And after going and going and going, people started coming.
20 years since I've had skates on. We had to get them out and get them sharpened, and we're going to give it a whirl.
Can you try 10 halves?
Yeah, skate rentals at Dock's Harbor Inn. Food stands. Bonfires.
It is bringing people together. It's been huge for our community.
And all it took was a global pandemic to remind War Road of the winter resource running right under its nose.
We happen to have a place right on the river here all day, nonstop, from the right away in the morning all the way until the sun is setting.
Weekly, volunteers man fire hoses to keep the massive rink smooth.
I just said, let's do it.
While Sam Goulet is among a team of high schoolers that helps tend to the daily brushing. All of which inspired Steve Christensen.
65 was the last year I played.
To pull from the basement his high school skates.
Pretty awesome. I mean, those things are about twice my age.
Well, I used to think that in the Netherlands and where they have canals would be so neat to be able to skate on. And now we have it here.
Here, where kids all but born on skates are witnessing the rebaptizing of Hockey Town USA on a river. For the news, I'm Boyd Hooper.
As Minnesota nice as they come. Well, with each mission to Mars, the technology that records and sends back images gets so much better, doesn't it? Up next, poring over the details from the highest resolution panoramic image ever seen from the Red Planet. And the Potato Head toys were always about making them your own, right? Well, now the classic brand's inclusive update for the modern family. Here it is, the first high-resolution panoramic image of Mars, taken from the rover Perseverance. And it is packed with detail. NASA hosted a viewing party of the shot today. The rover camera system is so powerful that zooming in on the shot reveals the front edge of a crater a mile and a half away. Percy also serving up a detailed view of rocks that were scorched by the retro rockets from the landing craft. NASA's released a full resolution image for download, just in case you want to explore the landscape from home.
Want to wallpaper your bathroom with Mars? That's the file to use, highest possible resolution. And there are many of us on the team are just giddy and spending hours just pouring through this.
The panorama made up of 142 images shot on Mars and stitched together down here on Earth. A whirlwind day for Mr. Potato Head. Hasbro, the toy company that owns the humanoid taters, announced Mr. Potato Head will be losing his title. Just Potato Head, no Mr. Then they clarified. Turns out Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head are not really going anywhere, but new Potato Head families will serve as gender-neutral versions of the toy. They're expected to be on store shelves later this year. 45 seconds left on a race to the finish. Breaking this hour, the Senate parliamentarian has ruled a minimum wage increase to $15 cannot be included in President Biden's COVID relief package. The acting Capitol Police Chief says the same militia group that stormed the Capitol are now talking about blowing it up and killing lawmakers when President Biden gives a speech to the Congress. A senior law enforcement official tells NBC News it's not considered a fully hatched plot. And Lady Gaga offering $500,000 reward for the safe return of her dogs after robbers shot her dog walker and stole two of her pooches. And now you know the news of this Thursday, February 25th, 2021. See you right back here tomorrow night. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.